Next paper is also from the Toronto Center, Mr. R.R. Thompson, Observations of the Periods of Eclipsing Variables. Mr. Thompson.
Benefit of those of you who are worried that the health of Mr. Thompson might have suffered since the last time you saw him, I'd like to announce that I'm not Mr. Thompson. My name is Fitzgerald, and I'm presenting the paper for Mr. Thompson because, unfortunately, he was not able to attend. An eclipsing binary system consists of a faint star orbiting a brighter companion, the latter being frequently the smaller of the pair. When the orbit plane of the binary system is directed towards the Earth's neighborhood, total or partial eclipse of the bright component occur at every revolution. Smaller secondary eclipses occur when the companion passes behind and is in turn eclipsed by the primary. I think the slide itself is self-explanatory. The diagram demonstrates the connection between the apparent physical relationship of the two stars and the total light emitted by the system as seen from the Earth. The vertical scale is compressed in this idealized light curve. In addition to the orbital period, the configuration of the light curve reveals the relative size and proximity of the two stars. When this is combined with spectroscopic observations, absolute data can be obtained of the masses, densities, and orbital elements of the stars in the system. The first eclipsing binary to be discovered was Beta Persei, or Algol, whose period was established in 1783. Over 3,000 eclipsing binaries are now known, many of which are bright enough to be observed by naked eye, binoculars, or small telescopes. The plotting of light curves from visual observations of the brighter eclipsing variables is quite practicable and can be a worthwhile activity for amateur astronomers. Located in the left arm of the W of Cassiopeia, RZ Cassiopeia is an eclipsing variable with a period of just over a day, a sharp primary minimum and a wide range of from 6.4 to 7.8. With reasonable skies, it is within the reach of 7 by 50, or better still, 10 by 60 binoculars. I think you can see here the W of Cassiopeia and the area we're dealing with. This is, I believe, Iota. And here it is blown up with 7.360 SU, I believe another variable, and RZ. Now this is a 2-minute exposure of the field of RZ Cassiopeia made on Tri-X film using an F2.9 lens of F8 focus. It is one of a series taken in between the visual estimates which form the basis of this paper. The density can be seen to be midway between the 6.8 and the 6.0. The exposure was made after the eclipse was over, and it illustrates the normal appearance of the field with RZ at maximum. And here's Iota here, and this one is the 6.0, and here's SU, and there is RZ Cassiopeia. Now, here is the variable at minimum, some 3 hours earlier on the same evening. The density is slightly less than the neighboring 7.7. This illustrates the clear and rapid change in the variable, which are as marked to the eye as they are to the astro camera. Such a lack of subtlety makes RZ Cassiopeia an ideal object for the beginner. Now, I think we can repeat these two slides, and it'll give you an idea. Now, we'll go on. Guess I pushed the wrong buttons. Ah, here we are. Now, this shows the observer examining RZ Cassiopeia through 7x50 binoculars on a bright and sunny afternoon. Such a procedure is not recommended to either beginners or experienced observers. It was made necessary by the fact that the flash pictures taken on the same spot at night the week before failed to synchronize with the camera shutter. I might at this point point out this is Mr. Thompson's Jerish Polar Axis telescope. He's in the happy position of being able to observe at extremely cold temperatures in relative warmth inside a closed observatory. I might also mention that Mr. Thompson is now in the process of replacing this observatory with a larger observatory, which is going to be mounted on an extension to his house. Mr. Thompson has a very understanding wife. Raw observations of an eclipse are made using the same comparison method as that employed for long-period variables, starting in good time before a predicted minimum. The results are then graphed as shown here for the evening of October 7th, 8th, 1966. The curve is naturally not as symmetrical as that obtained with a photoelectric aid, but by employing a kind of graphic statistical mean, a reasonably accurate time of apparent minimum light can be obtained. First, a vertical line is drawn a little to one side of the apparent minimum. And I think this is the vertical line here, am I right? Then the graph and line is carefully traced. The tracing is then reversed and moved into a position where there is the greatest agreement between the reverse tracing and the original. The new position of the added line is then marked on the original. Here is a summary of the original curve, the reversed curve, and both positions of the added line. The statistical mean of the observed minimum is now found halfway between the added lines, and time is read off the horizontal abscissa. It should be pointed out before proceeding further that the purpose of such observations for amateurs is not the evaluation of masses and densities of binary system components. It has been discovered, however, that the orbital periods of many eclipsing systems are slowly changing. With eclipses occurring daily or even more frequently, changes of fractions of a second in period will accumulate through the years to produce minima that occur ahead of or behind the predicted time based on the epoch when the variability of the star was discovered. Such changes are readily apparent with the rather crude methods outlined above. For this reason, the AAVSO has recently embarked on a program of patrol observing to keep track of changes in period in the brighter eclipsing systems. An article in the current issue of Sky and Telescope discusses the possible nature of such observed changes in the orbital period of Algol, a naked eye variable. Unfortunately, a raw minimum obtained in this way cannot be used for direct comparison, since the light which carries the message we require takes 16 minutes to cross the Earth's orbit. It can reach us early or late, depending on whether we are here or here, and here or here is not supposed to be here or here, quite obviously, but here or here, because these are two positions where you could observe one in the morning sky and one in the evening sky. Yes, it can reach us early or late, depending on whether we are here or here in our orbit, and depending on whether the observed star is on the ecliptic or at the ecliptic pole. In the latter case, of course, no correction would be required. All such raw observations must therefore be reduced to the position of the sun by the heliocentric correction. Observations of the minima of eclipsing variables made by amateurs are reduced by Joseph Ashbrook and Leif J. Robinson of the AAVSO, and published by Commission 27 of the IAU of at Konkoly Observatory in Budapest. In this specimen, IBVS, the column gives the observed time of minimum with heliocentric correction, the number of the eclipse, the observed minima, a minimum minus the calculated minimum, the number of observations, and the observer. Reductions for the observation of October 7th, 8th, 1966 are shown here. And I think Mr. Thompson's name can be
seen here. Thompson, right here. Can you see that?
Of interest is the fairly close agreement of all observers on the observed versus calculated value of about 0.040, which in decimals of a day means that the minima of RZ Cassiopeia are arriving 58 minutes late. Comparison with the epoch on which the prediction was based and simple division will then give the rate of change in period per orbit, in this case about 0.2 seconds. In conclusion, to show what such simple observations can lead to, we plotted 6 observed eclipses about a common minimum, and with a felt pen and lots of imagination, came up with a light curve for RZ Cass, as smooth as anything you might get from a 1P21 and a Krone amplifier. Thank you. Lights, please. I feel that if I were to attempt to answer any questions, I might possibly get myself in deep water, so I think I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There was a question. Would you like to try to answer it?
Thank you, Dr. Markowitz.